Yankee Y Mobile.
At AI4 DQ1, this is Kilo, Bravo 4, Charlie Bravo Alpha. Name here is David.
Daniel, this is Kilo India 4, Delta Tango Yankee, KI4 DTY.
Yeah, I missed the K part. It came out, it sounded more like an A than a K. I didn't think that was right, but anyway. these days, with calls, you never know. So how you doing today?
Good, running some errands and trying to get my garage organized. It's been a wreck for the past 6 months. So I was trying to get a bunch of stuff ready to go to the dump and to the scrap metal place.
I'm sitting in the drive-thru line here, getting ready to pick up a prescription. Whoops. Here we go. For CPA Mobile.
CBA, KI4, DTY. Did you get your prescription?
Certainly did. And, for the right price, you can, I can sell you some of this stuff. I'm just kidding. I got my grandson in the back seat, and I'm taking him through by his old daycare here at the hospital. His mom used to be a nurse manager here at Memorial, and he stayed at the daycare here on campus. So just doing a little nostalgic tour here for him. He's eight, there's a lot of nostalgia there.
Over downtown Greenville then, I guess?
Not really. I'm at Memorial Hospital on the Grove. Still on the campus. I'm making my way off campus, and I'll be headed back over to Taylor's.
Yep, my neck of the woods. I'm over in Greer, headed back to Taylor's myself.
We're in Greer a good bit because, we're right there. Our subdivision's right on Rutherford right before you hit Wade Hampton. And we're right there on the other side of the street from Texas Roadhouse. And, of course, Walmart's right there on our side of Wade Hampton. I can almost walk to Walmart. Really, I could, I guess. It wouldn't hurt me. And we go to Greer a lot to eat or shop and that kind of thing. My wife's always going to Target or one of those stores over there. I can't even think of the names of the ones that she goes to a lot, but I know Target's one of them.
And right around the corner from you, I'm right where Rutherford meets Wade Hampton. I am, there's a BBT bank right there. That's Edwards Mill Road, and that's where I'm at.
Edwards Mill. And I usually, when I'm riding my motorcycle, I'll take that little run there from Rutherford, get on Wade Hampton, go a whole eighth of a mile to the next light there, and that's Edwards Mill. If you turn left, going eastbound, and I go up through there and get on 290 and eventually hit Highway 11. It's usually where I try to wind up.
I'm on Route 11 on the motorcycle.
Highway 11, it's I used a lot, and it's especially during the week, and now weekends, you have your fishermen and a few people are going up to Caesar's Head, that kind of thing, drinking and all that, so but I've never been on 11 when it was crowded. That's what I like about it. It's got nice easy curves and some straightaways, and it's just a nice scenic highway.
You might have three boys, and we'll go up there to Wildcat Falls or Jones Gap, and we'll either go fishing or go hiking. So we love that area. It's always pretty, and always kind of contemplated having property out there because I do like it. It's not that far of a drive either.
I'd love to live up on Highway 11, especially from where, like, when you get on 11 there at on Highway 25 and go north, somewhere up around that area, I think would be a nice place to live. Or, you know, towards Table Rock. I'm sure the property's probably more expensive there. But we came real close to buying some property on going up 25, right when you get to the state line there, the top of the hill, that steep grade, there's a turn to the right, and it used to be called Cougar Mountain. I don't know what it is now, but we looked at a lot up there one time, and I wish we'd bought it, because, man, it would be worth a fortune now.
I always love to be outdoors, and so I try to take them out whenever I can. We haven't gone camping yet, but that's on our to-do list. That's something they've been dying to do. But I would love to have like a little 10-acre, 15-acre lot that, you know, if we wanted to, we could go camping on and eventually build a house. I'd love to be out and not too far out, but I'd love to be out in nature instead of downtown. But Taylor's is pretty, and we've enjoyed it. We've lived in Taylor's now for 12 or 13 years. So we've enjoyed it, but I'd love to have a piece of property where we could just hike and camp and just enjoy ourselves. But yeah, I love Highway 11. I think that's a pretty little route.
Jones Gap, and you got that waterfall if you get north, just above Cleveland there, and I don't know the name of that waterfall, but it's on the right there, headed toward the Caesar's Head. Before you get to Caesar's Head, turn off. I think that's 276. I might be wrong. It wouldn't be the first time. I've ridden my motorcycle up Caesar's Head too. I mean, that's, if you like some curves, boy, I mean, you just about meet yourself going there. Some of those curves, they are really wicked, even on a motorcycle. But especially the one I have now, it's a Valkyrie, and it's a big bike. It's a 1500, and it's a six-cylinder horizontally opposed six, and it doesn't do the curves as well as the V-twins always had. This is the first six I've had, and all my other bikes were V-twins, and you can lay them down a little bit lower in the curves. This one you can't. The foot pegs just scrape the. I've actually scraped the pavement several times with it, and I realized, hey, you can't do that on this bike.
K94 LCI Portable. All this land back around Caesar's Head and Table Rock takes, unless you was up here all these decades, takes a lot of greenback.
Oh, you're cracking me up here. You need to repeat that, because I think I missed some of that.
And is all this land up here around Caesar's Head and Table Rock, unless you was up here ever since, your family was up here ever since the late 40s or so, you better have a lot of greenbacks to make it happen. and those curves going up to Caesar's Head. One on a motorcycle, I ain't careful, one could be off the road somewhere and hurt real bad.
For my first ride up Caesar's Head, I think it was the second time me and a couple other guys had gone for a ride, and they were all my age or older, and they took me up Caesar's Head. I was on a Kawasaki Vulcan 750, so I was on a smaller bike, but I was not used to those sharp curves, and I was pretty nervous. And we were coming back down the mountain, and this guy on a crotch rocket was coming around one of the curves, and he was flying, and he threw his hand out and waved, you know, and I was hanging on for dear life, because I was like white knuckling it then, and I thought, who is this guy waving waving at me? He had that thing, he just about had that thing laid down on the ground. It was one of those real sharp curves, boy. He was really getting into it.
And that other spot's like DTY said, that's Wildcat Wayside. A lot of people have went off up and there in the summer months. Got lost, got hurt, and all kinds of things up there over the years in the summer months, too.
Let me make sure I have it. Well, then, we were out there earlier this, late summer, and there's all these helicopters flying over while we were fishing, me and my boys, and there was probably, I don't know, 20, 30 cop cars. It was insane how many police passed by us. And apparently a hiker got stranded up there somewhere.
KFIWLO.
KB4ZBA.
KB4ZBA in the group, KFIWLL. Good afternoon, just sitting here reading the mail. Wildcat Falls is pretty dangerous, though. We've when I worked emergency services, we plucked several people out of there and out of Jones Gap, all of that area. And you're right, that 276 is gear highway going up the mountain there to Caesar's Head, but I just wanted to jump in there real quick, just sitting here listening to y'all. I gotta get back to work, KFIWLL.
That's how I know myself, from monitoring all these frequencies, the park repeater frequencies. That's how I found out here is CBA knows about amateur radio here. You're on two meters for monitoring scanners and all like that, and you hear plenty a lot up there at Jones Gap, Wildcat Wayside, and right up here at Table Rock State Park, too. As far as their frequency goes for the state park, it's 453.8750 if anybody is interested.
Give me that frequency again.
Now, part of it's analog, part of it's digital, but the analog you can hear. It's 453.8750, just up above our 70-centimeter band. Table Rock's on that, Paris Mountain State Park's on that, and it's kind of a hybrid system up there toward Jones Gap.
60-centimeter?
Above our 70-centimeter band. 70-centimeter band, remember, ends at, 450 megahertz? Well, that's 453.8750, just beyond the 70-centimeter band.
So listen to it or no?
You can, some of it you can't. Table Rock up here is still using analog, and of course, where I'm at, I don't know about Paris Mountain for sure, because I can't hear it, but some of it's analog still, and some of it's digital, but what's analog, you can still hear. But you got to keep in mind, though, that their repeaters don't have the elevation that ours has. Like this one up here at Table Rock up here, I can hear it real good, but I'm right here below Lake strongly up here, so it's no problem for me to hear, but you won't hear it at any distance because it's just on the high point of the motor road. No real height to it at all.
All that day where all the helicopter and the cops were flying by us, I was trying to figure out what frequency I would be able to hear something on to hear what was going on, because I was over there at Wildcat Falls, so I knew something that Jones Gap or Wildcat was going on.
About 2 or 3 years ago, you could hear all the county stuff from Greenville County going on up there, but since then, Greenville County's went all digital, left analog, so unless you got a brand new, and I mean a brand new, scanner receiver, you ain't going to hear them anymore.
That info, because I was wondering how I could listen if I wanted to.
Well, anybody can listen. You don't have to have a license to listen. It's the talking part you got to have a license for.
Absolutely right. You know, anybody can listen, but you're not supposed to talk, of course. But that's how I found out about this repeater here up there on the mountain. I had a receiver, got my first receiver in the late 70s, and found this here, and that's how I found out about amateur radio through all that.
See, I always enjoy hearing you talk on here.
He remembers some of the ones that I used to hear on here, like W4HCZ, Earl Brown, and various ones like that. He remembers some of those.
Yeah, I bought my first radio from Earl, my first antenna. I bought a little 2-meter, what was that thing? Can't remember the brand name. Asden 4000, and I put it in my car and had it on a slide mount. I could actually put it either one of my cars because I had antennas on both of them and had a slide mount for it would fit both cars, and so I just had to unhook the antenna and the power, and I was good to go.
Them, but I was listening during all that time.
Since I still wasn't sure how to even get a hold.
Well, like I told you before, from 76 on to 05, when I realized the rules had changed, but I'd been listening on and off all during that time.
Hey, let me see if I got it here. Yeah, when they changed the rules, I forget what year it was, but I actually grandfathered into the general class because of the changes. All I had to do is just fill out some paperwork and pay $6, and I went from a Tech Plus to a general class. Boom.
Part of a hearing deficiency, and I never was able to copy the CW.
Just technician. I've been staying for that general, but I am not even close.
For DJC.
KI4LCI portable.
Andy and Dave, I don't know who else is on here, but, you know, years ago, they would, you know, when I got my driver's license, early 79, I think. And back before I got my novice, they would give you a WN or a KN call. It would be a 2x3, and they'd drop the N off of it, and you'd be a K and a W, or later on you'd be a WA or WB. But you only had a year to upgrade. If you didn't upgrade your novice to technician in a year, you had to start all over again, if I remember correctly. You were limited to 75 watts. You could do 2 meters or 6 meters for us, but it was all as a tech, but as an artist, you were CW only. And I just barely, they changed the rules later on, of course, but when they changed it, you didn't have to have a cable. I started at 5, and I got my technician, and then I got my general, when it was 13 words per minute. Never did upgrade past that. Then I wish I wish I'd done it then.
Yeah, I got my, I still had my same call when I was a novice. This is my novice call, my first call and only call I've ever had in ham radio, and I just kept it, and I kind of wish I'd gone to the N4 calls when they came out with that, but everybody said you need to get you an N4 call, but I didn't understand back then. Of course, now I do, but... Anyway, y'all carry on. I'm in the garage. I got my grandson, and we're going to go in the house and see what kind of trouble we can get into. 73s to all. I see, I guess Andy, go ahead and pick it up. KB4CPA.
You're right about that, Jerry. I remember others at the time on here talking about that. You had that year to upgrade from novice to tech. Well, you, as you say, you lost it all.
Andy's the guy that got me interested in radio was WP4REE, and his name was Oscar Boatwright, and he lived in Fort Mill, and I worked with him when I was working for Springs up there years ago. I spent about 15 years up there, and he got me interested in it. I'd been a shortwave listener before then. Of course, you had a scanner, too. Like most people that are interested in radios do, that's kind of the transition, I think. But I wasn't even aware of VHF and UHF repeaters back in those days, other than what I heard on my scanner. But he got me interested in them. We had a big club back then. I mean, a lot of the guys in the club, Andy, been licensed since the 40s. The club been around since 45, 46, I think York County Club has been. And that really got me interested in setting me on fire. And I learned the code in a matter of about a month. And, you know, back then you had to be able to send and receive. An extra class generally, you know, gave you your, I believe extra, I think advanced did, but an extra class ham could give you your test and your code, send and receive test. And then you take it had a 10-question exam, and then you're a novice. But when I got mine, you could stay a novice as long as you wanted to. You didn't have a one-year waiting period. But that's where a lot of these WA and WP calls came from, because originally they were WN or KN calls, and now you see them. Now they're issuing those WNs and well, the KN calls, I think they're issuing. I don't know about the WNs unless it's a vanity call. But you had a year, and that was it. And it really put a lot of heat on you to take that 50-question exam. And back in those days, you had to go to the FCC office in Atlanta to take it. I believe all three of many VECs back then.
Well, they got a portable for ID. All I heard on this repeater back during the time, you're right, they didn't start that VE program until sometime in the mid-80s sometime. And everybody uttered, and I believe from what I heard on here at the time, certain ones could give you the novice, but for all the rest of the class license, you had to go to that, as you say, the field office down in Atlanta.
The FCC did come around back in, well, I'll tell you what happened to me. I did my novice, and I stayed a novice till about May or so, maybe, of 79. And then I went to the FCC in Atlanta, took my technician exam. It's 50 questions. You had to be able to do formulas and that sort of stuff, too. You didn't have a question pool like you do now, too. And you couldn't take a calculator, and you had to be able to draw circuit diagrams and stuff like that. And then in June of 79, let me drop this thing for just a second. I had to go take my 13-word-per-minute code, and I was ready for that. And they gave the 13-word-per-minute code. This was in 79. It was in Nashville. Like I said, I don't know if there was some situation with ARRL or what, but they actually had you could take the code test. I took it at Greenville Tech in 79. And back in those days, I had my novice call was a KA4 call, and you can only change it to a 1x3, like an end call or something like that. If you were a general, and of course you had to be in advance, you got a 2x2, and next you get a 1x2 or a 2x1. And so I took the code test at Greenville Tech, and the guy said I didn't pass it. turns out that what they did was the people that were doing it didn't know code themselves, so they had a key to the answers. What they'd do, they'd give you the, they'd send you, you didn't have to sing, you just had to listen. They'd send you the text at 13 words per minute, and you had to copy it all down, and you had to go back, and they had each transmission, they had a question, you know, what was the RST on it, what was the QTH, and they had it was like three or four multiple choice answers, and whoever gave that exam had like a product, like a key, and that's what answered, and they told a bunch of people they failed. And when I was walking out the door, a guy said, wait a minute, I said, they used the wrong key on it. I came back in and I passed mine, but people have actually already left the test site that had passed the test and been told that they'd failed. Of course, they got in touch with them later on, but it was one of those things where you didn't have an actual amateur giving the test, if I remember correctly. It was somebody from the SEC. But anyway, I was devastated because I was sending and receiving 18 words per minute pretty good. So 13 was kind of a breeze for me. But that was my ham radio story of the day. N4DJC Friday.
But why? Donated? I don't remember your full call. It's KI4DTY, I think. You still here? Two. Yeah, it's like I was telling them. I was listening around here back in there. Got that first receiver at Christmas of 76, and it happened to have this band on it, and this repeater was up here back then as well, and this is the first one I tuned in on.
My first scanner was a Heavenly Bearcat 4s, I think was what mine was. It had like, that was 3. Had 8 channels, I think, and it was crystal. And I gave that thing to my mother and father-in-law, or sold it to them years ago back in the 70s. And I want you to know that they lived over here in Hartwell, that the frequencies for the police and the fire stayed the same on analog until about 2 years ago, Andy. And then they went to Moto Turbo, you know, DMR. And it's encrypted now, but they still put out the non-encrypted stuff on analog channels, which is kind of weird. But that scanner, you know, they used that thing for years, I guess. And I don't remember when they both of them passed away a few years ago. And I wish that thing might have got thrown out somewhere. But I wish I'd still had that thing, because those old Bearcats, they had metal caps. Those things had good audio. N4DJC Friday.
Well, see, I pulled them Friday. Well, that's like I was just telling them a while ago. Back before Greenville County left analog, and that was about 2.5-3 years ago, somewhere in that range, not only would I hear the park repeater up there, I would hear them up there when they was up there looking for these people. I would on the analog stuff that Greenville County had, but they left analog somewhere about in that range 2.5-3 years ago. Matter of fact, I was here listening one night just before they left analog, hearing some of the EMS complaining about their analog communications not working, and them doing a test real late at night, right in April of that year, just before they made the change over. And after that July of that year, that was it for the EMS, the rescue, the sheriff's department, and then a year later, the county fire over there in Greenville County left a year later.
On P-25 now, I guess, Andy, I think there's some DMR around, but it's not a lot. I mean, they sell that stuff and encrypt it, and that's the end of it. But at least most of it is open instead of encrypted like it is in some areas. I know here in Anderson, they got DMR for the city services, you know, for the jail and some other stuff, and it stays pretty busy. But, and the Clemson buses, transit, they run, I think they've got NXDN on some of the transportation stuff. But I got an SDS-200, I listen to all of it, but, you know, I don't know how much longer it's going to be before they start encrypting everything. That's going to be a bummer when it does that.
the airport for 5 days. Well, what gets it about it all if your scanner is older, say, than about 5 or 6 years old? Because they rebanded 800 megahertz about that time, about 5 or 6 years ago. If it's older than that and your scanner can't be adapted, like I am with this BC-785D that I got in 04, you ain't even going to hear the 800 anymore. And mine was P25 capable, but they rebanded 800, and that scanner can't be modified for the way it is now, so it's dead as a hammer. You've literally got to have a brand new scanner in order to hear even P25 now, because what they done 5 or 6 years ago about rebanding the 800 megahertz band.
I've read about that, Andy. I didn't have anything quite that new. The latest scanner I had up until I got this one about 2 years ago was a you know, just a Bearcat handheld analog. It had 800 megahertz on it. And I used it for NASCAR and other stuff, but I also used to listen to railroads. The railroads used to be pretty busy. I don't know how busy they are anymore. Mine only did FM. It didn't have AM frequencies on it. But one of the guys is, he's one of the development engineers at Uniden, and they were asking for input from some people about what would be the next project. And I said, well, I said, one thing, I said, is if you can get a reasonable price P25, even if it doesn't trunk track, and have one that's got, so you can listen to some of the stuff and NXDN on it too. Because a lot of the railroads are going to NXDN eventually. I think that there's some of them running now. But even if it doesn't trunk, you know, if you can get here P25, because a lot of these things don't trunk on P25. But it's hard. It's so confusing, and it's just ridiculous. These things have gotten so complicated. And like you said, if you got one more 4 or 5 years old, you just got a brick. You can't hear nothing but analog on it. And other than air band frequencies, there's not a whole lot left of analog.
Comes the airport of 5D. Well, that's the way I am with that. And I bought that BC-785D in 04, just before I got my tech license. My original intent was get something to receive all the, you know, what I could hear here on VHF, UHF, the ham band. Well, I also had the other programmed in, but until that rebanding 800 come about, I was able to hear stuff on trunk and P25. But when they did that, and everybody started leaving analog too, there's nothing you can hear on 800 now. And as far as the railroad goes, they've got a remote base up on Paris Mountain on 16950, but it's not, you know, like a repeater here. It's only a remote base. You pretty much only hear one side of it, and QST done something on it about a year ago. They're still using some FM, but they are slowly, as you say, changing over as well.
Yeah, that 16950, that's Norfolk Southern Road Channel, but that's not being used as much as it used to be, Andy, because they moved all the dispatchers, a lot of them, to Atlanta. Now, I hear a lot of CSX stuff down on, I think it's 161377 or somewhere in there, I think, and of course, the Pickens is 161280. It comes through here in Anderson pretty often. I can hear it pretty well. You know, they junction down here with Southern down here about middle of town, because they come through downtown Anderson, and it's been pretty active, and a lot of other ones I can hear, but Norfolk Southern's gone. They've got, you know, their yard channel, I think, is 16415 up in Greenville. I can hear it in Greenville, but even with a beam antenna, I can't usually. Sometimes I can get it down to here if the propagation is right. But, you know, they run big, high wattages on those trains. But here, both sides of that dispatch, you know, used to use a duplex, and it was like 160. 415 and something, anyway, it was a duplex frequency they used for the dispatchers, unless you had a railroad radio, which some of these guys actually, you know, bought some old ones that got thrown away. It's hard to hear both sides of conversation on those rail frequencies.
Tells the guy 415, well, one of their dispatchers is a ham, and he frequently used, when he lived, was he had to go down to Atlanta, too. He used to be down at Greenville. I done forgot his call, because it's been two or three years since he told me about that frequency, but he used to get on the 145.47 two-meter machine on Caesar's Head a lot, and told me also about some of that, and you're right. It's the fact that he went down to Atlanta, where he used to be in Greenville prior to about 3 or 4 years ago, somewhere in that range. That kind of says it all. But anymore, if you say you don't have something brand new, just due to what they done with 800 alone, you ain't going to hear nothing other than what's still a little left on analog, and that's, as you say, not much anymore.
Thing is, all the simulcast stuff that they do from multiple towers at the same time. You have to be, you know, if you're sitting in one spot, it works okay, but only a couple of scanners are the SDS-100, 200, about the only two to handle that simulcast, unless you get something like a real, you know, like a Motorola or something like that. But Lord knows how much money. But the other ones, like those, they're the cheapest trucking P-25 the unit makes now is right at, you know, the handhelds, $350, and I think the bases are like close to 400, maybe a little bit more. So I mean, you talk about, you know, as much as, you know, more than ham rigs are now. But you know, we were talking to this guy trying to get him to work on unit to make a smaller. You know, smaller, less expensive rig. It maybe does some trunking, but it's not, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles of some of the other ones. But they just don't have anything. I mean, it's either the bottom of the line, you know, which is just a straight analog, or a small HT that's got trunking on it, which is, you know, close to 400. You go up to SDS series, which is $650 or $700. And a lot of people don't spend that kind of money for a scanner, especially with a all the encrypted stuff is happening over the last 2 or 3 years.
Because the portable 5D right here in Pickens County, we haven't left analog yet, but we're scheduled to when they get the $4 million to make it happen with, as well as 5G throughout the county. We're still on analog, but we're due to change over at any time. And like I say, Greenville County done that 3 or 4 years ago, and Oconee County Sheriff's Department, now they are on DMR, UHF DMR, but as you say, there's very little first responder activity anymore on analog this day and time. It's almost, when it comes to the analog, just about, you've got receivers, you can listen here where we are, and maybe certain other things, but when it comes to first responders, it's pretty much a dead hole.
No, County or Pickens County. Pickens used to have, Pickens County Sheriff, Oconee County Sheriff, you know, they won't analog for a long time, but I could pick them up real good on just an inexpensive scanner, but I don't have them programmed in my 200 yet, but I do have Oconee, but it's, They use a lot of encryption, I think, Andy, because I can't hear much. I can usually hear, you know, the DMR from here pretty easily on my scanner, but I can't hear as much as I used to. So I don't know whether they've gone encrypted some channel or not. But I know that Pickens and Pickens at one time, I think it was Pickens, one of the two that was on analog, and so was some of the fire departments up there. But it's probably been 6 or 8 months since I've tried to listen to any of that stuff. N4DJC Friday.
LZI portable. Up here, we're still on analog, but it could, like I say, when those two certain things I talk about fall in place, that'll be disappearing here.
Might go to LTE or something like that eventually. We'll push to talk radio and stuff, and you know, a lot of the EMS stuff, you know, I think they do a lot of stuff by our computer, so you never hear much on it anyway. It's still out in open here, but, you know, they don't, you know, patient data and stuff, they send it out over cell phones or, you know, some other method. They don't send it over there anymore.
I thought back in 04, you know, all these changes, I guess, would take place, but I was just getting in. Like I said, I bought it just a year before I got my tech license in 05, but you pretty much, you have to have something brand new when it comes to a receiver scanner-wise and hope, as you say, it ain't encrypted. Otherwise, you know, as you say, you're not going to hear. Now, forestry up here, is still using analogs. I know up here when they do these preventive burns up here around on the mountains up here, they still hear them on analog, and they got three analog repeaters around still. One day they'll leave too.
Carolina DNR changed over last year. They're on the power metal system now. But a lot of that stuff is encrypted too now. They don't leave anything in the open. I still hear forestry when I'm up in that area, but I don't hear anything down here from them because I'm just too far away from it. But I gotta run downstairs and see what the wife wants. But good talking to you. And I'll hear from you again soon. Well, hope you have a happy new year. But I enjoy talking about the old times when it's a little bit easier to listen to stuff nowadays. It takes a PhD to figure out what you're supposed to do. We'll talk to you later. M4DJC, clear out to you.
I found out here about amateur radio was through this very repeater when I got that receiver in Christmas of 1976 from this very location. Long time ago. KI4LZI portable.
For LZI. KO4NUE.
Well, see, I'm portable. I just hadn't hooked fixed gear back up yet due to those storms we had last night. And I heard some of them talking up here about some of these places up here, and I popped in here momentarily.
Up there, Camp. And I think I possibly got my antenna situation straightened out. I asked Dave some time ago for a signal report, but now I got everything buttoned down. You hear anything on this I need to know about?
Well, they got portable. No, not right now. I don't. Have you tried the 195 to see what you can do with it?
I don't think so. I was wondering if you'd step up there with me and test it out with me real quick.
Because I could say it right now, I'm just on HT. Let me go to another spot where my X is a lot better for it, and I'll be right over there. KI4LZI portable.